Hi, welcome to the podcast for TheForce.net. I'm Eric, your host, bringing you the latest news, events, and commentary from the Star Wars community. In today's show, we're going to be covering listener feedback. Most of the listener feedback I've got for today is in regards to the live-action television series, so here's a quick recap of what we know so far. First, we know it's due sometime around 2007. George Lucas is going to get the ball rolling, then he's going to step back and let other people take over. The series is supposed to be 100 hour-long episodes, and the first season will be written all at once. It'll be set in the 20 years between episodes 3 and 4, and won't focus on any of the major characters from the films. The two most prominent rumors floating around right now are that Kevin Smith, best known for his films Clerks, Dogma, and Chasing Amy, will be writing and directing a 3-episode story arc. And the more recent rumor is that George has recently talked to Daniel Logan, now 18 years old, to reprise his role as Boba Fett. Before we get to the topic of the TV series, let me get to some miscellaneous emails first. Tara, who's a fellow podcaster and does a show called Canine Cast, wrote in and said that she and her co-host Walter liked the running box office totals for episode 3 that I've mentioned here in the podcast and on my site, and that they hope it can pass 400 million. Well, once it broke what I expect to be its last significant box office record, I figured I'd wait and highlight it again when it broke $400 million. However, I hate to break it to you guys, but I don't think we're going to get to see 400 million. If we do, it'll barely squeak by. And in what might even be worse news to those of you still feeling bitter towards Titanic, unless there's some major revolutionary change in theater going somewhere down the road, Titanic may hold its record for eternity. Episode 3 was released about a month and a half ago, but it's coming out on DVD in just over 4 months. Now, think about that for a moment. If it weren't coming out on DVD for another year, I'm sure it would last much longer in the theaters. But why pay money to keep seeing it over and over again in the theater if it's coming out on DVD in a few months anyway? Sure, many of you will point out the drastic difference between seeing the film in the theater and seeing it on DVD at home. And you're right, there's a huge difference. But reality is that most people would rather just wait than go back and see it again. And this is becoming a trend in the film industry right now. The studios bring in massive amounts of money from DVD sales, and so DVD releases are happening much sooner after a film's theatrical release than what used to be the case. I'm still not so sure how I feel about this trend. I can see where it gives the studios more money sooner, since the films are still fresh in people's minds by the time the DVD comes out, but they also need to consider that all those people who don't go to movies anymore, saying just wait for the DVD, are now being proven correct. A couple can buy a new DVD release for about $15, yet if you go out to the movies, you've got to buy tickets, which depending on where you are in the country can easily be $10 apiece. Then you've got to buy soda and popcorn, which you're probably paying about $8 a person for, whereas you probably got soda and snacks at home, and if you don't, it's much cheaper to buy them from a store, not to mention the fact that at a store you can get anything you want. Plus, you can watch the movie in the comfort and privacy of your own home instead of showing up an hour before the film, trying to find a parking spot for an opening night movie, having to wrestle for the armrest with the stranger sitting next to you, after having sat down about 20 minutes early in order to get decent seats, then going back out to your car after the film and trying to exit a parking lot full of people who are all trying to leave at the same time. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm very much a theater person. I love going out to see movies. But from what I've just described, I'm sure you can see how more people are leaning toward DVD releases now. And the box office slump everybody's talking about, along with rising DVD sales, just confirms it. You can have convenience and comfort for $15, or you can have inconvenience and larger time investment for about $50. And then you don't even get to keep the movie when you're done. My point is this, if DVD releases continue to be so soon after theatrical releases, Titanic will continue to reign supreme in the box office records, and Episode 3's performance will be deceptively impressive, especially if it breaks 400 million. Here's a quick rundown of the stats on Episode 3 so far. Right now, it's at just under 360 million. Last weekend, it pulled in a little over 6 million, holding its 7th place. It's been out for 5 weeks now, and its total box office gross has dropped by $15 million per week from weeks 3 to 4 and from 4 to 5. With War of the Worlds coming out this week, it's likely that Episode 3 will drop by half again for the next couple of weeks, which would easily push it past $375 million. But beyond that, it'd still have to bring in another $25 million, At what I expect would be a rate of about $3 million per week from that point on, it'd take another 2 months in the box office, at least. Is it possible? Sure, I'm just saying it's not a safe bet. As far as records go, it's got the box office records for best midnight showing, best opening day, and best single day. It's tied for fastest to 100 million, tied for fastest to 200 million, and it holds the record for fastest to 300 million. It's currently number 10 on the highest grossing domestic box office sales. Another piece of trivia for you, only four movies have ever broken $400 million in their first theatrical run. Those are Shrek 2, Titanic, Spider-Man, and Phantom Menace. A New Hope and E.T. both broke $400 million during their 20th anniversary re-releases. Nick wrote in saying, "Hey, I was wondering, why do you use only original trilogy music for the transitions? It would be kind of cool to hear a bit of Duel of the Fates or Battle of the Heroes." Good question. There are two reasons. One, the podcast in general has kept me busy enough that finding segue pieces from the prequel trilogy hasn't made it high enough on the old to-do list that I've gotten to it yet. But it is on the list. The other reason is that my soundtracks for episodes 1 and 2 are in a box somewhere from when I moved last year, and I haven't located them yet. And being that I may be moving again in a couple of months, it might have to wait until then. But that is a good question, and it's something I will be taking care of at some point. Catherine, along with several other females, wrote in after hearing last week's podcast, assuring me that there are female listeners out there, which I never doubted. I just couldn't quote any of you, because very few of you had written in, and those who had were typically giving general feedback on the show. Catherine listened to the rundown of New Republic-era novels and pointed out that if we're talking about essential reading for that era, I must include the original Dark Horse comic book series. Catherine, you're right, we do have to include those. Jay's going to be coming up with a segment for comics similar to what I did for the New Republic-era novels, and especially given the controversy surrounding the original Dark Horse comics, that's definitely something we're going to be talking about. Jason brought up a very good question about Episode 3. He says, "When Obi-Wan and Yoda discuss who will fight who after viewing the security hollows of Anakin going on a rampage in the temple, instead of splitting up, why didn't they both go after Palpatine and then hop on a ship and go get Anakin? After all, Mace showed up with three other Jedi to place Palpatine under arrest. Obi-Wan is always about working together when it comes to fighting, as with Dooku and Maul. Why is splitting up the better choice?" Well, what most people don't know is that there's a cutscene there. The original conversation between the two of them took place as they were walking out of the temple rather than while they were still in the room. In the original conversation, Obi-Wan suggests that they remain together to confront Palpatine, since it would give him a better chance of success. But Yoda then explains that the two battles must take place simultaneously, or they can't be intercut during the movie. "Cutting between scenes, a better sense of pacing gives," Yoda tells Obi-Wan. So they both decide that, for the sake of the movie, they have to split up. Of course, George thought the whole explanation was too lengthy, so he cut it and called Ewan McGregor back in for a reshoot, which is what you see in the final version of the film. Had you going there for a second, didn't I? Okay, seriously, I have no idea. The only thing I can think of is that while staying together might have given them a better chance of success, splitting up might have given them better odds at success. And I'm sure we can split hairs over the terms there, but you've got to keep in mind that Yoda is a very powerful Jedi, and that Obi-Wan, at least according to the material outside of the films, had built up a reputation, with Anakin as his partner, for accomplishing the impossible. If they both confronted Palpatine, and some chance circumstance happened, contributing to their defeat, nobody would be left to even confront Anakin, let alone defeat him. And they couldn't both take off to go get Anakin, because they didn't even know where he was at that point. And if they had, that would have left Palpatine unattended to do even more damage than he already had. By splitting up, even if one of them failed, the other might succeed. I mean, let's say Obi-Wan's got a headache. If he gets himself killed, Yoda might still have had a chance against Palpatine. But if they both stuck together, Obi-Wan might have gotten them both killed in their very first encounter. We're getting pretty nitpicky here, though. It's a great question, Jason, and you're right. It does go against the grain of what Obi-Wan has adhered to in the past. But what it really boils down to is that certain logical considerations had to give way to moving the story along. None of us like it, but that's par for the course with practically any type of fiction. So this is one of those things where I don't think we'll ever see a continuity-based answer for it. Speaking of such things, I'm still getting emails about Padme's death. Asaf writes in, and I hope I got the name correct there, saying, "Remember, this is a droid saying this, who has no understanding of the Force. This is just my opinion, but I think George is creative enough and bright enough to do all this, and it's not too far-fetched either. As Palpatine said, midichlorians can create life. Well, if that's possible, why can't it be possible the other way around? Namely, causing the midichlorians in a body to kill it. In this case, Anakin focusing his full power on Padme in his rage, causing the midichlorians in her body to kill her. Remember what Palpatine says. It seems, in your anger, you killed her. We might infer that he's lying to him, but I believe it's the truth. The medical droid simply does not understand the Force and its power. Okay, fair enough. That's a good explanation. And I can buy that if you were powerful enough to manipulate midichlorians in such a way to create life, it's possible you could also manipulate them to destroy life, perhaps like a cancer. Of course, we still don't know that Palpatine was even telling the truth about midichlorians. But there's logic behind your idea, and it's no more far-fetched than any others I've heard, including the way it was dealt with in the movie. Dan writes in saying, I have to say, I'm pretty shocked at the in-depth discussion and criticism of Padme's death by fans and yourself. It's painfully obvious she died of a broken heart, in the poetic romantic sense, of course, but which Lucas made real in order to drive home his point about how strong Anakin and Padme loved each other. And she died of nothing more, nothing less. He goes on to say, the biggest problem with the first two prequels is that there was little romanticism. Here, Lucas gives us the most romantic aspect of the entire saga, Padme dying of a broken heart. And people are saying it isn't believable? It gave the whole movie an even more tragic arc. There's no use in trying to explain her death. It's meant to be, let's say, literal poetry. Well, Dan, I agree with you in that Lucas was trying to be poetic. But as you said, there's been little romanticism so far. If the series had been full of solid romantic themes and events, I'd have an easier time accepting her death. As it is, I could say that if it happened in the classic trilogy, I could almost accept it. I don't think that the mythological themes are the same as romantic themes, even in the broader romanticism context you're referring to, but I could accept it. In the prequels, though, even the myth was gone. Well, okay, maybe not gone, but it was certainly downplayed. And that's okay, I don't really have a big problem with that. But it wasn't so much that Padme dying of a broken heart was the most romantic aspect of the saga, it was that it was almost the only romantic aspect of the saga. The only one that succeeded at romanticism, at least. So I guess to me, it just felt out of place. I find it hard to believe because, well, it doesn't happen. I mean, there's no such thing. Except in very over-the-top romantic stories. And I guess that's really the issue for me. Episode 3 didn't feel like a romantic story to me. Now, listen, I don't fault you for your opinion on this. I agree 100% that this is probably exactly what Lucas was going for. And I'm glad it works for you. Seriously. I mean, I know some people who take your point of view on this, but then they can't stand the fact that an entire legion of the Emperor's best troops got wiped out by teddy bears. Yeah, I make the teddy bear jokes too, but that aspect of the saga never really bothered me that much. It's consistent with the theme of the classic trilogy of nature versus technology and of quality over quantity, but for some people, it's a real distraction. Different people see things from different points of view. I guess Padme's death is just simply one of many things upon which Star Wars fans will always have a difference of opinion. On to feedback about the television series. A different Dan sent in a very lengthy email covering many points. He says, I think this is a good time for Star Wars to enter the sci-fi TV ring. For one thing, with the demise of Star Trek Enterprise, sci-fi fans have finally buried the Alien of the Week TV format. If you told me back in the early 90s when Star Trek Next Generation was going off the air that in 2005 a dark, moody, sexy, political remake of Battlestar Galactica would be immensely more successful than the current Star Trek offering, I would have told you to lay off the Romulan ale. The attention span of TV audiences has really expanded, and we no longer want episodic television where the beginning of every episode starts with the same crew who are all unchanged from the last 200 episodes. I agree, and looking back at television from the 90s, we can see the progression to where we are today. Star Trek Next Generation gave us a show where every problem they encountered was wrapped up neatly by the end of each show. Deep Space Nine and Babylon 5 introduced a mix of what's commonly referred to as arc and non-arc episodes, those that furthered an overall story arc and those that were self-contained episodes. Babylon 5 did a great job of this, as the characters changed radically between Season 1 and Season 5. And then we arrive at today, where we've got shows like Battlestar Galactica, where every show contributes directly to the overall story arc. Or, in an even more extreme example, 24, where if you miss one episode, you might as well wait the entire season out and pick it up on DVD. The thing is, Star Wars could easily work in either setting. I'm hoping that the writers are in tune with what's going on in today's world of television, and don't try forcing a square peg into a round hole. Dan brings up another good point on the issue of Star Wars leaving the big screen for the small screen, saying, "At the end of the day, for every hour the average fan has watched Star Wars in the movie theater, I would venture to guess that he or she has spent 10 times that number watching the films on the small screen at home." You're right, which is why I don't get the point that some people try to make about how Star Wars belongs on the big screen. I know these guys all got the DVDs and VHS tapes the day they came out, so they can't be that adverse to it. Sure, I completely understand that there's a different experience in a movie theater than watching something at home on DVD, but if we're not going to get any more films anyway, are these people saying they'd rather not have a TV show just because of the medium upon which it's being distributed? That they'd rather have nothing at all? See, I just don't get that. One more interesting point Dan makes is on the effect it'll have on fan films. He says, "If the show is successful or not, I fear that there may be a negative impact on fan film viewership. I'm sure they'll continue to be made at the same rate they are now, for a while anyway. Personally, fan films fill a void. They provide new Star Wars content that is short, fun, and easy to take in. A good series would do pretty much the same thing. Star Wars fan films are so plentiful and of the highest caliber of amateur filmmaking because there is a real demand for new Star Wars content in the visual media. After another 100 hours, not including the 3D cartoon, are added to the Star Wars canon, I fear that the fan film niche might be crowded out and that the high viewership they've enjoyed up until now may wane as a result. Just think, why would someone who wants a Star Wars fix spend time downloading programming to watch a film of lesser caliber when that person can wait a few days for the next new episode on TV? This could be a real downside if the Star Wars fan film community starts to weaken so soon after its birth." Well, Dan, you're the first person I've seen point that out so far. I've got two responses. First, as you said, Star Wars fan films are plentiful because there's a demand for Star Wars content. The fans want Star Wars stuff. So what happens when that demand dries up because the more casual fans are already getting their fix? Could be that the amateur filmmakers take their films to a different genre or franchise. Some of you may not know this, but there is an entire fan television series being done called Star Trek Excalibur that takes place during the time of the original Star Trek series. And there are several fan films based on comic books, some of which you can even find at TheForce.net. Star Wars, Star Trek, and comic book worlds are all rich enough that you can come up with new creative content that doesn't tread all over what's already going on in the official content. Other franchises, such as the much-talked-about Battlestar Galactica, doesn't have such an expansive universe, and therefore would be very limiting to an amateur filmmaker. So I think we'll still see Star Wars fan films, I just think we'll see some of the filmmakers branch out into some other franchises, too. My second response is this. There are 100 episodes, and it's expected that they'll be split up into 5 seasons of 20 episodes each. So at the rate of one show per week, that means that for more than half the year, there aren't going to be any new episodes coming out. You make a good point that people can wait a few days for the next new show, but they can only do that for a little under half the year. So I think we'll see fan films become more of a seasonal thing. Brian, host of the Top 10 Rated Podcast Coverville, writes in and says, "Hope I'll finally get to find out how, during the 19 years between Episode 3 and Episode 4, they still couldn't find a decent use for the mouse droid, other than incessant squeaking." Actually, Brian, they do have a very specific use for the mouse droid already. It basically acts as a courier, taking messages back and forth between offices on the... I guess they have a data network for that, don't they? You know, now that I think about it, I seem to remember reading that they're basically a form of security droid. They've got a built-in camera system, and they can travel the various hallways of the Death Star and Star Destroyers at such a speed that they're like having a mobile patrol that's always able to... Actually, they've armed stormtroopers like every 5 feet on the Death Star, don't they? Okay, so, like, Emperor Palpatine embedded a little force thingy inside of them, okay? So, like, the more Vader has around him, the stronger he... never mind. Sorry, dude. I got nothing on the mouse droid thingies. Sam writes in saying, I'd have to agree that the formation of the Rebellion and the last surviving Jedi are going to be the main focus of the series. When I was reflecting on your podcast, I thought that this would probably work best if the Rebellion were trying to contact the Jedi. That would give them reason to why they're traveling to all these different planets that you just have to do in a Star Wars franchise. Then you could have a couple of episodes following the Jedi, then a couple more following the Rebellion, and so on. I guess my biggest concern with the series is, does anybody care about the story if it's not about Vader? How can a story that's supposed to be between 3 and 4 not involve Anakin Skywalker? He's the person's life we follow through the entire series, and I think fans will be begging to get glimpses of Vader every now and then. I guess this is the reason why the series has to be a standalone show that doesn't need the Star Wars trademark attached to it for it to be successful. Yeah, I think that's going to be the key to its success, Sam. I think that it needs to be able to succeed even if the names were changed so that it weren't Star Wars. If it's just a documentary crew walking around behind Vader as he takes over the galaxy, it's not going to be very good. Yes, we've got a good character established in Vader, but that doesn't make a good series. There's got to be more to it. Does anyone care if it's not about Vader? Sure. We just spent about 25 years with the saga not being about Vader. Sure, Episode 3 puts a different spin on things, but up until last month, we've spent decades where at least the original trilogy was always about Luke, and a full decade where almost none of the novels were about Anakin or Vader. That's exactly why the television series has so much potential, because there are so many stories to tell. And even if you limit yourself to just what goes on in the movies, what happens to other Jedi who weren't part of the initial Purge? How does the Rebellion get formed? The formation of the Rebellion alone is a huge story, involving tons of people, none of whom were major characters in the films. And then you've got smugglers, and you've got bounty hunters, and crime lords like the Hutts. I don't think that the show has to be focused on Vader directly, and I'm sure he'll make an appearance here or there, but he can't be everywhere at once, and the Empire is otherwise intimidating too. And there's a reason for that. And I'm sure that will be the antagonistic aspect of the show, the political and military activity of the Empire as a whole, not so much Vader as an individual. Victor wrote in saying, "My friends and I have been debating this topic endlessly over the past few weeks, and we feel we know what would make a great TV series. The best type of show, we feel, would be a Star Wars anthology show, covering a variety of time periods, but notably the inter-trilogy period. The best way to present these stories would be in multi-week arcs, effectively creating mini-movies that can stand on their own if needed." Victor goes on to give some really good examples, and there are definitely many stories that would be interesting to see told in this way. But there are some problems inherent to anthology stories. First, let's say you watch a 3-episode story arc and you really like it. Then the next one starts, and it's a little slow at first, and you don't necessarily care that much about the character it's focused on. And you start thinking, you know, I really need to get my homework done. Or, I'm going out tomorrow night, maybe I should go get groceries now. I mean, sure, you can record it, but the show just went from something really cool to something you'll watch when you get around to it. Then there's the characters. If you change primary characters every 3 weeks or so, you're now at a point in storytelling where you're starting from scratch and you have to establish those characters all over again. That takes time. If you were using characters already established, either throughout the movies or earlier in the TV series, all you'd have to do is jump in and start telling the story. There are only two places I've seen such things work. One is with shows like The Twilight Zone. But with that show, it's always about the plot. It's never about the characters. And they're always single stories. People won't come back next week if they don't care about the characters. So this wouldn't really work for Star Wars. The other is in comic books, but in almost all cases, the anthologies still focus around one character, such as Batman or Quinlan Vos. Sure, there are some exceptions, especially in the Star Wars universe, but comics are also a little different in that most people subscribe to them. You pay for them. You've already bought the book. Even if it doesn't catch your interest right away, you already paid for it, so you might as well read it. But even more importantly, even though the diehard fans still read such things, those books often don't sell as well as the titles with consistent familiar characters. So, an anthology style of series wouldn't be impossible, but there would definitely be some hurdles they'd have to overcome that aren't inherent to other styles. And in our last piece of feedback this show, Glenn brings up a good point, saying, "Much of the speculation is focusing on if it'll be about Boba Fett, or one of the Jedi trying to avoid being killed. However, a possibility that no one seems to speculate on is the idea that it would be about Captain Antilles. This would allow the show to be about a minor character, but would also contain the familiar characters of C-3PO and R2-D2, which would also keep the longtime fans still involved. Also, if it were about Antilles, there's the possibility of making a sort of exciting Han Solo character that everyone seems to have been missing in the new movies. Well, Glenn, I think that'd be a great idea. I mean, he's a character that has at least appeared in the movie, who directly ties Episode 3 with Episode 4, and who's the pilot for a rebellious senator. I mean, there's a lot of potential there. And as you said, it means the droids could also be a part of the series, which, as we all know, the droids have always been something near and dear to Lucas's heart, and he's always kind of said that the entire Star Wars saga is told from the point of view of the droids. So I think this would work out really well. I hope you guys enjoyed today's podcast. I'd like to thank all of you who voted for us at Podcast Alley this month. We made it into the top 50, and we're still climbing. But don't forget, the votes get reset every month, so if you'd like to continue helping us out, don't forget to head over there and vote for us for the month of July. I really appreciate the comments you guys have left there, and as always, I want to encourage you guys to email us anytime you have questions, comments, or feedback. Our email address is podcast@theforce.net. As always, I should point out that the opinions expressed here belong to the listeners whose emails were read, and myself, and they don't necessarily reflect the opinions of other TFN staff members, nor of Lucasfilm. TheForce.net is not affiliated with Lucasfilm in any way. The podcast is copyright 2005, TheForce.net, and as silly as the sentence is going to sound, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. Until next time, take care, and may the Force be with you.